Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone. We are going to try this again. You're listening to This Week in Health Innovation on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I'm the producer and co-host of the show, and joining me, as always, is my partner, is Dr. Pat Salber. Pat, are you with us?
I am.
And it's always good to hear that confirmation because we can never take anything for granted in this business. We had just a preview before we get going. We were scheduled on Wednesday to hold this broadcast, and we had a first on Blog Talk Radio. They apparently had a power outage in their data center, and we had some miscues that didn't allow us to actually go live and record our broadcast. So we're at it again here. So this is our third in a series with the Countdown to HIMSS 2014 series. And HIMSS is scheduled, that's the Health Informatics Management Systems Society. They're scheduled to run this February 23rd through the 27th in Orlando, Florida. And our special guest today is Lucian Yankovicki, MD, who's the investment manager at Qualcomm Ventures, who will offer his insights into the digital health landscape. Dr. Yankovicki makes investments through Qualcomm's Life Fund, that's QLF. His background and experience in medicine led him to believe that this is a transformative period in the healthcare space, especially given the renewed interest in performance and cost metrics that are prevalent today. In this context, Dr. Yankovicki is focused on wireless healthcare opportunities and has led the QLF investment in Practice Fusion, co-led the investment in Fitbit, and currently works closely with Telcare and ClearCare. Dr. Yankovicki will keynote the Venture Plus Forum Sunday, February 23rd in Orlando, on the topic of the digital health revolution. The evolution of digital health. So with that correction, Pat, over to you.
Great. Thanks, Greg, and welcome, Lucian. I'm glad you were able to come back and join us again. And I thought that what I would start out with is just to talk a little bit about your journey from physician to, do I call you a venture capitalist? I'm not quite sure exactly what your role is, but why don't I turn it over to you and you can tell us how you made that transition.
First of all, I wanted to thank you very much for having me on today. I really appreciate you guys making the time. And then secondly, I'll address the question. So I between college and med school, I spent a year at a venture capital fund in Boston called Atlas Venture. And I was basically an intern that was supposed to be a one-month internship. I ended up staying for 10 months, really enjoyed it, but I was planning to go to med school, so I went to med school that August and went through med school and enjoyed med school, but I always talked about venture and how exciting it was at the intersection of healthcare and business, and that was, you know, in my spare time, that's what I thought about. I decided to do my residency. I did an internal medicine in New York at Columbia Presbyterian, and at the end of residency was a transition point, and I still was always talking about the excitement of the business side of healthcare. And I said, it's time for me to make that jump if I'm going to do it. So I moved to McKinsey, the consulting firm, and then I spent some time there in their hospital practice and their biotech and pharma practice. And what I learned there, which I thought was really interesting, was I always thought I was going to go back into biotech and pharma, which is what I did when I was at Atlas, was that those guys are really good and they work really hard, and it's just a really challenging business that they're trying to do. However, when I went on and learned more about the administrative side of healthcare and the IT side, the challenges there weren't that the people were weren't. I shouldn't say that the people aren't good, but the technology wasn't being implemented because the incentives weren't right. And I saw with the healthcare being the 18% of GDP, and with the Affordable Care Act, there was these incentives that were finally going to push hospitals and push the system into implementing more efficient care. And I thought that was a really interesting opportunity. At that time, I got to know Jack, who's the other investor in the Qualcomm Life Venture Fund, so I would characterize myself as a venture capitalist, at least the corporate one, maybe. And I was, while he was talking about the tech side, I was talking about the healthcare side opportunities, and we meshed, and I joined the fund about almost 2 years ago now. So there's the story of how I am, where I am.
Yeah, very, very, very interesting story, and great that you bring this real healthcare background into the venture world. So what I wanted to do now is have you tell us a little bit about what you're seeing out there that is exciting, and perhaps we talked about before whether it's evolutionary or revolutionary, but what are some of the areas that you're looking at with your Qualcomm Foundation venture hat on in terms of really good opportunities that could do some of the things that you talked about in terms of really changing the business of healthcare?
So I'll address the revolution versus evolution question. I think we tried to touch on this last time. I think it has to be an evolution, not a revolution. Revolution implies very quick change, and usually there's disastrous consequences in the short term. I don't know any historical revolution that I can think of. Even the U.S. revolution, there was a lot of uncertainty and disasters between the time before America became America. So I don't think that that's tolerable within the healthcare system. So if we try to do too much too quickly, we'll completely revolt from any changes and we'll stick with the status quo, which is can be evidenced by what's going on with the Affordable Care Act, where people are scared of how much is changing how fast, and so the president keeps delaying some of the changes, trying to push forward in a slower fashion. So I think that has to happen. And is probably what will happen, or I hope happens, that there is some change. I think that's the first thing. And then I, as far as what the opportunities we're seeing and how we're thinking about it, when I first joined the fund about 2 years ago, Jack and I spent about 6 months thinking about this world, and we sort of thought about it in a couple ways. First, we wanted to define what our definition of digital health was. And what we see digital health in our minds, and with our Qualcomm mobile hat on, so obviously we have a biased perspective, is it's really traditional life science sensors and technology and traditional IT in healthcare for the first time coming out of their silos and moving information more freely. And it's around that movement of information that Qualcomm Ventures and what we see is the opportunity, because that's our competitive edge. That's what we understand. So, for example, we would invest in a company like Telcare, which is a traditional medical device company in one sense. It's a glucometer. It's been around for 20 years. What we liked about it is by having a 3G-enabled glucometer, it totally changes what you can do with that information. So, first of all, as a patient, you never have to write down your numbers in that little book that every doctor is the bane of every patient and doctor's existence. Secondly, that data can be transferred to your doctor, so when he sees you, he can use that information much more easily and doesn't have to waste his time in interpreting what you wrote down in your book. It can be in the cloud, and he can have it instantaneously and processed for him. And thirdly, for a system, you can track people in real time and understand who needs to see a doctor when and when not, so you can be much more efficient. So just by moving that data and allowing it to get there in real time and more freely, it totally changes your experience. So that's sort of the high level, what we're looking for and what we think is going to happen. And our investments are across the devices that are doing that, but also the platforms that enable that, right? So one of the big limitations we see is it's great if you have this telcare device, but if you have a closed EMR that doesn't accept this data, it's going to be useless anyway. So how do we find the platforms that can implement this new data into the healthcare system? So in between the doctor and the patient, and also on the other side between the insurance and the patient, and to finish off the triangle between the insurance and the doctor. So I think that's the high level, what we define as digital health. What we then did was spend a little bit of time looking for verticals that we thought were ready for these kind of changes. And so we identified six that we're interested in. Those are fitness, wellness, so you know, companies like Fitbit that we invested in last year, chronic disease and chronic disease management market, transitional health, so around the 30-day readmission where there's an opportunity to make money since there's all the new laws around that. Aging in place, and what we mean by aging in place is, you know, populations aging, how do we keep them in their home longer and safer since it's not sustainable to move them all to nursing homes, and fundamentally elderly people want to stay in their home. And then the last two are clinical trials. So hugely inefficient trials. We think that technology can make them significantly more efficient. And then the last one is what we're calling telemedicine. But what we mean by telemedicine is how do you change the outpatient model to be more efficient and give people the right care at the right time at the right level. So those are the six areas we're thinking about. And over the last year, we've sort of taken a layer deeper and said, how is these markets evolving across these verticals? And what we've seen is a pretty clear pattern, and which is it starts with companies adding new devices, new sensors, new apps, so adding new data that for the first time is not siloed. Then there's a role where now there's 10 companies and each one has their own data information. So what you see next is an aggregator of this data, so companies that can aggregate this data and put it into one place so it makes it more valuable. On top of that, then once you have this data is how you analyze it and do analytics on it so you can get some insights. And then finally what you see is people taking advantage of those insights and trying to do change the system, either behavioral change or systemic change from the learnings that this new data has provided them. So I think those are the areas that we've seen across those verticals. Where we're the most interested right now and where we're looking is around analytics. And in my mind, there's a couple layers of analytics. So there's analytics on the individual data source. But what I think is more interesting is how do you integrate all that data on top of what the data that already exists. So how do you integrate the biometric or social data on top of claims or EMR data? And I think that's a really interesting opportunity that we've spent a lot of time focusing on and trying to understand better and look for companies in.
And oh, that's very interesting, and I love the way you've broken it down because you really covered all the important areas in healthcare with the verticals that you talked about. One of the things that I think would be really interesting if you're comfortable doing that is if you name some names for us. So you did say in the fitness wellness area you've invested in Fitbit. What kinds of investments have you made in the other verticals?
So we're obviously building this out as we speak, and every 6 to 9 months we review our verticals. But I'm happy to talk about some of them. So in the aging in place vertical, for no reason I picked that one, we made a very interesting investment in a company called ClearCare. And so I think the aging in place is a really interesting market. Everyone, you know, intuitively gets why it's interesting. So we spent a lot of time thinking about that space. And what we felt is that the current generation of elderly, which we define not as 65 plus, but 75 plus, is what I like the term Jack puts it, is the remote control generation, is not the iPhone or app generation. And this generation, not everyone, but on a whole, on average, is not overly comfortable with the intrusion of all these devices. And so there's a lot of companies that are trying to do monitoring and be intrusive into their space. We didn't think that this generation is ready for that. I think that the time will come when, you know, when I'm 65, I think I won't have a problem with it, but I'm not quite there yet, or 75. So what we looked for was, how do we infuse technology into the current system where people are comfortable? And what we found was that ClearCare, the market they're addressing is this home care. So it's not home health, but home care, which is activities of daily living for elderly people. So it's when your mom needs help cooking or cleaning around the house, it's not the care of her diabetes. It's much more around the house type work. And there's about 4 or 5 million people in the U.S. that get this kind of care. And it's provided by about 20,000 agencies that hire outsourced people into their homes. And these agencies are traditionally have been very either using legacy systems to manage their business or pen and paper. So ClearCare is a Silicon Valley modern IT platform addressing this market. So it helps the agencies with their back office work, and it's a modern, as good as anything you'll see out there. But what we liked about it is it also found its way into the home, and it does that through two ways. One, the worker that comes into the home can have an app on their phone, or currently what's more common is they use telephony. And so the worker will use the home phone of the elderly person and dial in. Press 1 if you cooked for them. Press 2 if there was an issue with cooking. And if 2, then you leave a message. And what that enables the agency to do is, for the first time in real time, they can see the checklist of things that have to happen in the house, and if they're happening, and if not, what's wrong. What used to happen is they would have notebooks in the home, and someone would write down an issue, and someone would pick up that notebook 2 weeks later and throw it into a closet and never see it. So now you can address what's going on, and what they're also doing is opening that system up to families of the elderly person who tend to be the people paying for this, so they can see what's going on in the home. And we see a day from our perspective where, one of the checks is, did mom take her medication today? Check, yes, she did. Well, she has high blood pressure. What's her blood pressure? And then you can implement a device into the home leveraging this platform. So I think that was we thought, a way to get technology infused into the system to sort of build the platforms underneath that enable it, that I was talking about a little bit earlier. So that's one example. I can keep going if you want and talk about some of the other spaces.
Yeah, I actually love that example because we talk so much about patient engagement, but when you start to involve people who are in the home who are truly engaged with the patient, and you start to leverage it with technology like ClearCare, it starts to, in my mind, reshape what patient engagement is in a very positive way. And I would like to keep going, if you don't mind, I'm going to focus you on an area that I'm interested in, which is clinical trials. And I'll do a full disclosure. I'm actually mentoring at UCSF's Idea to IPO course. And my team has a really cool and, I think, potentially powerful electronic data capture system that could be disruptive in that space. So I'd love to hear what you're thinking about in the clinical trial arena. Maybe tee up what the problem is for our listeners who don't understand how outmoded and clunky the existing clinical trial process is, and then a little bit about how you're thinking about solutions.
Right. So on a high level, I think pharma companies, the numbers that were are stated is they spend about $70 billion on clinical trials a year. And these trials, to your point, are very clunky, very inefficient, very pen and paper heavy. And so we saw all these things and said there's clearly an opportunity for technology to make these trials more efficient, and there's a lot of money being spent and could be potentially saved if that was successful, right? Each, you know, there's all these studies talk about how each day saved during a clinical trial is worth, you know, I don't want to cite the number because I don't remember exactly, but $1 million or something to the company. So we saw that, as you mentioned, clearly. And again, one of the limitations is that they're very pen and paper heavy. So what we felt was that there has to be platforms that are digitized to eventually get these devices into the patient's hands. They can save time and effort. And by digitizing the pen and paper, you can also save time. For example, to the point I'm getting at is, you know, you can have the best live core EKG monitoring for your patients in an AFib trial, but that data still goes to a guy that writes it down in an Excel file or writes it down by hand. It's not going to add any value to the trial. So where we thought what needed to happen first was there needs to be better platforms that for them to leverage that these things can ultimately plug into. So we invested, was it last year, over a year ago, so 2 years ago in 2012, we invested in a company called Gobalto, another Bay Area company. And what they're focusing on is they sort of identified one of the key areas where there is a very inefficient flow of information, and it's the study startup. And what happens there is about 60%+ of all the checks when you're filing for an FDA for a clinical trial of the paper, I wouldn't call it the valuable information. Obviously, that's what's going on in the trial, but just the checklist of what's this doctor's resume? Is this site certified? It is in the steady startup phase, and it has to be processed accurately. Otherwise, when you close their trial, if you're missing anything, you can't apply to the FDA, and it's a time delay and a time hole in a thing. So Gobalto is starting by addressing this problem, and they're digitizing it and built a workflow management so that for the first time, instead of just faxing one paper over to one guy to sign it and then faxing it back, there's a system that tracks where it is in the process so that you can know where you're moving forward. And the idea there is if you start digitizing this, it's going to be easier to digitize everything down the road across the trial. And this can be sort of that higher level platform that everything goes into. So the day you close the trial, you can just send this electronic file directly to the FDA and file it that day. And so I think that's where we think it has to start, which is why we invested in the company.
Yeah, well, that sounds really interesting. Was your other company a Bay Area startup too? Bay Area again.
I think the majority of our companies are up in the Valley. Even though I'm down here, I'm up there almost every other week.
Oh, okay. Great. Yeah, it is a little bit of ground zero. Are you open, just for listeners who may be, hoping that they could get some money from Qualcomm, or do you restrict yourself to California? Are you open to entrepreneurs from the Midwest or the Northeast? And also, if you could just tell us a little bit about, you know, your strategy. Are you early stage? I mean, kind of what does companies have to be interesting to you? Do they have to have revenue? Can they be a really good idea with a prototype? What's your investment philosophy?
So, first of all, Qualcomm Ventures, the broader fund, I'll give a 2-minute explanation. So Qualcomm Ventures was founded in 2000. We have $800 million under management. We have 20-plus investors, all but two of us, Jack and myself, are generalists in technology. In 2011, we established a business unit, and at the same time, we established the Qualcomm Life Fund, which is a subsection of the venture fund, which is $100 million committed to this digital health space. To date, we've made about 12 investments, not about exactly 12 investments. I can name them later, or you can check our website, QualcommVentures.com, to see them. The way we invest is typically $2 to $5 million at the initial investment, and then we'll follow through the life of investment as needed, and we try to keep our pro rata. We're a global fund. We're open to investing not only in the Midwest, but we're looking at things in Europe and India and China as we speak today. And to your question about where we are at our stage, one of the beauties and the challenges of the space is that it's very hot, and so there's a lot of companies going to this phase. I the Rock Health study said something like I forget the number. Well, it was $1.9 billion was invested in digital health in 2013 in companies with two million or more. So and then there's a whole another 1,000 companies below that. That didn't get 2 million in that first investment round, in the investment round. So one of the challenges there is, since there's only two of us, we don't have the bandwidth to see everything. So how we've decided to handle that is the prerequisite is to have generated some revenue and sort of have the market be a validator that there's some value in your product before we can do the work. Otherwise, we'd be spinning our wheels, and it'd be very hard to find any investments.
Well, that was really helpful and very interesting, because you and Jack together must have just this amazing overview of what's going on in the space, which I'm assuming you're going to share with us at the Venture Plus Forum in Orlando as a part of HIMSS when you give the keynote, the evolution of digital health. Do you have any one-liner that you'd like to tell people about what you're going to talk about as a way of wrapping up here?
Sure. I mean, I think I touched on it a little bit. It's this. The one-liner is basically the evolution of companies in the space are, first you start with companies that are mobilizing the data, then you find companies that are organizing the data. Once it's organized, there's companies that are trying to analyze it, and finally there's companies that are trying to catalyze change. So I think that's the evolution you see across the space. And that no matter what vertical or where you're going, that's sort of the pattern we've started to see play out. And it's good to identify where you are in the cycle for when you decide to start a company and where that is. And obviously these will go back on themselves, and as you catalyze, you'll understand what companies need to mobilize and so forth. And it'll sort of be a circular pattern.
Well, I hear our music, and I just want to say thank you, Lucian. This was a fabulous conversation, and I'm really looking forward to hearing your keynote at the Venture Plus Forum. As a matter of fact, I'm looking forward to the whole Venture Plus Forum, which was a real hit at last year's HIMSS, and I'm thinking it's probably going to be even better this year. So thank you very much, Lucian, and we'll see you at HIMSS.
It was a pleasure.
And that'll have to be the last word. You've been listening to This Week in Health Innovation. My partner, Dr. Pat Sauber, was speaking with Lucian Yankovicki, who is the investment manager at the Qualcomm Venture Fund. And he will be speaking at the Venture Plus Forum, keynoting the evolution of digital health. Check it out. Also, want to say to Matt Holt, we did correct that it was Gobalto ad copy, which claims it is the de facto standard in the cloud for clinical trials. So thanks again, everybody. We'll do this again next week. This is Greg Masters for Pat Sauber. Stand by now.